Hi, my name is Brianne Hackman and my black is transnational.
You are listening to season 5 of My Dad's Podcast, My Black is Transnational, a podcast about blackness and reconnecting back to our native homelands. Find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Check us out on YouTube. You can follow us on Instagram or blacktransnational.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of My Black is Transnational. My name is Dr. Kalechi Bay Lambert, and coming up on this episode, I meet with Ms. Brianne Hackman, who is the CEO and founder of Best Body Africa, a company that is focused on promoting the consumption of African food in a healthy way, making the case that you can lose weight and lead a healthy lifestyle while consuming traditional African food. This is one of the episodes I thought was the coolest and one of the more fun episodes, among others, but one of my favorites to date. And before I get into that, though, let's go through our formalities. If this is your first time listening to My Black is Transnational, you can find this podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, be it Google, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, if that still exists, Afropods for sure. We're newly on Afropods. And you can definitely check us out on video via YouTube. The episodes tend to be uploaded a little bit later sometimes on YouTube, but you can find a video episode of our conversations on YouTube as well. Just look up My Black is Transnational. And you can check us out on social media at Black Transnational Podcast. You can find that on Instagram and Facebook. You can definitely check us out on Twitter at MB Transnational. And you can check out our website, which I encourage everyone to do. It's a one-stop shop, blacktransnational.com. You can find us there. That's where you learn more about the show, the guest. You can binge listen to previous episodes from past seasons. But it's a place where you can just get connected to everything that has to do with this podcast. So please check that out as well. So just to talk about this particular episode, which I said it was really fun. It's fun because it's something that's near and dear to me. I've published articles and a lot of the work that I want to do and continue to try to do as a researcher, scholar, is related to transnational African immigrants and their dietary practices. I've published an article that has pretty much made the case that traditional African food can be healthy and should be promoted because it's fresh, it's organic. However, how we manage it and how we distribute it and some of the other social determinants of health that impact it kind of limit African immigrants to be able to consume it more in a healthier way. What Brianne is doing with BBA is fascinating to me, and I had to reach out to her because she's kind of taking concept and applying it by being able to now put concrete information, concrete numbers, and being able to test it out with her and you know others that you can eat your African food, of course, with modified, healthier ingredients with more education, but you can eat African food and you can lose weight. You can even just maintain good weight. You can maintain a healthy lifestyle if you consume your African food. So we don't need to shame or remove African traditional food from our dietary options because of whatever it's been perceived to be. And I thought that was impressive and I wanted to talk with her more about that. And so I was glad that she was able to, all the way from the UK, come in and talk about her transnational experiences being in Ghana and the UK. We really don't get that many people from outside of the US to talk to the show yet about just what they're doing from a transnational standpoint, having those connections from the UK to Ghana. So we talk a little bit about that. And then we get into the food, we get into what her work is and what she's aspiring to do. And, you know, I thought this was one of the more insightful opportunities. And I do plan to hopefully build on my work, and learning from Brianne was awesome to be able to just see, and it gave me hope that we can make this thing a reality. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And without any further ado, here's my conversation with Ms. Brianne Hackman, CEO of Best Body Africa. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of My Black is Transnational. And I, for one, just have to say that I'm very excited to have this person on the show. I saw the work that they were doing on Instagram, and I was like, I have to, by any means, try to find a way to get in touch with this person, because they are doing the work that I've been just aspiring to do and collab with others, especially when we talk about transnationalism and health, which is my passion, my work. And so I have the pleasure of having, all the way from the UK, Brian Hackman, who is representing a company, Best Body Africa, which is a company that shows how to promote health and wellness and nutrition while maintaining African traditional diets. And so, like I said, for anybody who's seen my work and knows what I do outside of this podcast, this is home for me. So, Brian, this is just an honor to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really excited.
Yeah. So, of course, I usually want to take a minute to allow you, although I introduced you formally, I want you to take an opportunity to just introduce yourself, your cultural identity, where you're from, anything else that you want to share that's interesting about yourself, and then we'll continue our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Brianne. My name isn't really a giveaway as to where I'm from, but I was born in Ghana, in Accra, Ghana, West Africa. And I lived there until I was 11. Following this, I actually moved to the UK for school, so secondary school, as we call it, from the ages of 11 until 18. I then went off to university, still in the UK. I studied politics and did a master's degree in international development at UCL. And I sort of worked in the UK for a couple of years before I moved back to Ghana, mainly because I'd been in the UK for about 10 years. I got my citizenship. I felt like I'd been there for a long time, and I kind of wanted a touch of home again. And because of the area of work I was involved in at the time, so I worked in the international development sector, which is all about, you know, working to progress societies that aren't the most economically advanced in global terms. And I always had a strong connection with Ghana and always wanted to go back to contribute towards this development. So I moved back. I worked in agriculture space for some time, actually in a commodity exchange. I traded agricultural commodities, developed a lot of expertise in agriculture and food systems. Before I moved back to the UK in 2022, where I currently live. In all of this, I actually started Best Body Africa, which started off as Best Body by Brie, which was a health and wellness blog from when I was in university, with the aim mainly to share how I led a healthy lifestyle and lost weight while eating my favorite Guinean foods. Because a lot of people would ask me, oh, do you still eat jollof? And, you know, you're so in shape, how do you eat jollof and fufu and so on? And I was like, you can definitely do all that and enjoy your favorite foods. So I started that and it eventually transitioned into a business when I qualified as a nutrition coach. It evolved into Best Body Africa when I thought, well, I think this has kind of a mission beyond myself. It's not just about me. I think there's something in that and a wider purpose to expand to the African continent in general, beyond Ghana and beyond myself, to help other people. So that's sort of where my journey has been. I currently still work on Best Body Africa, you know, developing the platform, the B2B side, which is, you know, consulting for businesses who want to incorporate African foods or African nutrition knowledge into their solutions. This could be apps, but also the B2C side, which is, you know, actually helping people one-to-one with their personal nutrition, providing them with the tools and resources to do that. I also work as a global health strategist and consultant generally, but overall, I definitely brand myself as an African nutrition expert and also a global health strategist.
Wow. You know, you just captured so much in terms of like the transnational experience. I mean, for those who are listening, that transnational experience, being able to go back and forth, right? Being in Accra and going to the UK and doing your education there, and even your uni there, and then going back to work because you miss home and reconnecting back to Ghana, and then coming back again because now you have a vision and a plan and you want to, you know, you're developing that in the UK. And so my first question is, based on your background, I know you talked about like the health and wellness blog, but why food? Like, why that as your major like source of impact and connection?
Yeah, good question. I feel like I've always been a foodie. Mm. I think from as far as I can remember, I've always loved food, and I think a little bit too much, to the point where it's sometimes difficult for me to control how much I eat. And I tend to overindulge. It's not one food that I don't like. And I think growing up as a teen, I grew up as a teen in like the early 2000s, and there was a lot in the media around, you know, body image. Mm. It was quite negative, you know, and we've come a long way considering where we are now. We're celebrating different types of bodies. Mm. But I recognize that I, especially in moving to the UK and seeing, being in school with, I was in an all-girls school, being in school with a lot of white girls who were much skinnier than I was a bit curvy, and I was the only black girl in my year at the time that I moved at the age of 12, eventually more came, but, you know, the body image around the time was, you know, that skinny girl, and I always felt like I had to, you know, try to be as skinny as possible to conform. This led me to develop some unhealthy, you know, and a healthy relationship with food, in that I was trying different diets to try to, you know, become skinnier. Mm-hmm. And it goes to the point where I realized, you know what, Brianne, you like food. I don't think you could actually be that person that could restrict yourself. Food is so central to your life. So just try to find a way to merge food with, and the foods that you love, with a healthy lifestyle. And that's why I always try to incorporate, you know, Ghanaian foods into my health and wellness journey, to a point where I was able to develop a healthier relationship with food. And besides my own personal journey, I fundamentally believe that food is so central to our existence as human beings. Mm-hmm. Particularly healthy foods. We need food to survive. We need food to thrive. If you don't feed yourself the correct foods, the right nutrients, how are you going to be productive at work or productive in the job that you do? A lot of our productivity stems from the foods that we eat and our physical health. If you are not healthy, how can you carry out your purpose in this life? So food for me is central because I'm a foodie. I love food, but I fundamentally, for people beyond just me, I think food is just a fundamental aspect of thriving and leading a healthy lifestyle. And I think everyone just loves food. Mm. So why not get into an area that's so central to the lives of many?
Yeah. Yeah. And so how would you compare, based on your experience living back in Ghana and then being in the UK, how would you compare how people perceive relationships with food and healthy eating? How would you compare it in both lands? Because I think that's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. So I think it's fair to say in the UK, there's a perception of what healthy food is. So, you know, the salads, you know, maybe eating less, fewer refined carbs. There's also that sort of diet culture that exists here. So people, you know, falling for different fads and crash dieting and so on. And so I think over here in the UK, there's sort of this one way idea, and then I guess it conforms to the mainstream global idea of what healthy eating or what healthy food looks like. And this is, you know, the chicken, the broccoli, the salad, you know, those types of foods. And eating healthy, I guess, over here is quite accessible. You know, you have a lot of our marketing and foods and culinary systems catering towards healthy diet. There's a lot of healthy food marketing over here, so you're kind of bombarded with what it is to be healthy and have a healthy body image over here in the UK. I'd say in Ghana, our relationship with food is one of indulgence, based on personal experience, but also based on our history. Mm-hmm. I believe that what food is about, family fundamentally, and families coming together to enjoy foods together. And in Ghana especially, you'd see a lot of the dishes that we eat are eaten in, for example, a big bowl with different ingredients and large portions, because that's supposed to represent, you know, that communal eating and gathering of families among around a specific dish. We also really celebrate our local foods. And we have a huge variety. We're very, very proud of the foods that we have available to us. When it comes to healthy eating, though, on one hand, there's an acknowledgement that a lot of our local foods in Ghana are very nutritious. So, for example, moringa leaf has been used for centuries in medicine due to its high vitamin C content. We have an older generation of Ghanaians who, drink moringa leaf tea because they believe that it has, powerful health benefits, which it certainly does. But on the other hand, we have a younger generation who also is starting to also not starting to, but I guess already does see healthy and equate healthy to definitions in the mainstream world in Western culture, and that be associated with the Western foods. So you'd go to Ghana and enter a health food store and see a lot of packaged health foods that are commonly available in Western countries, such as in the US or in the UK. So things like quinoa or, Greek yogurt, foods that aren't actually grown in Ghana. But these are the, perceived healthy foods. So there is that perception, which is why I strive to show that, the foods that we have in Ghana are nutritious. You don't need to eat only Western foods to be healthy. They are healthy, of course, but we have a lot of healthy foods in our grounds as well.
I agree with that notion completely. And that was one of my driving forces, just upon my own personal, my research work and, really trying to connect the idea of transnationalism and health among African immigrants. One of my biggest discoveries, especially when it came to dietary acculturation, was just that this idea of westernized, I mean, the Western world had to be the key to healthy living. And that it's almost that appropriateness in health was associated with like some level of whiteness of just the Western world. Even though here in the Western world we are dealing with essentially the opposite, right? We have there a plethora of fast food restaurants, there are a plethora of all these unhealthy options and overeating and junk foods and all these processed diets. And even in my research, interviewing participants, especially when I interviewed African immigrants, specifically Nigerians, it was essentially the same thing where it was like, we are, our food is healthy, right? That was what they told me. Like, our food is healthy because we make it from scratch. We know exactly what we're putting in our bodies, right? So when we make our stew, when we make all this, we know exactly what we're putting in our bodies. And we can do that and sustain it. The issue was, of course, the having to abide or living the life, the demands of being in the Western world also requires, occupational demands, and you have to work multiple jobs, and you also have to make money. You got money to send back home to family members, so you don't have the time to be able to sustain those practices. However, you know it's good, but you don't necessarily do what's good for you because of your time demands and other responsibilities that you put as priority over, your health, right? Because at some point, it's not really about health, isn't necessarily the highest priority among African immigrants here in the US, right? And so I'm curious to know from you in the UK, like that your experience living there among the other, African immigrants that lived, I would just say black immigrants, because I know there are a lot of Jamaicans there too. What is that experience being a black immigrant like, and the cultural dynamics that exist there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the UK, well, we kind of had a system where, in the 50s and 60s, a lot of immigrants moved over to the UK from African countries and from Jamaica, and they essentially entered the workforce, jumped straight into British culture. And I know a lot of them actually lost their cultural roots through that process. And there was sort of a program of cultural assimilation where, you had to learn the language, you had to conform. If you were perceived as, different, if you spoke in a different tone or in a different accent, you were sort of bullied in schools, or you weren't deemed as part of British society, and you weren't able to advance. So I know a lot of immigrants from decades before, had to conform. So a lot of first generation immigrants, gave birth to the, you know, second generation of Black British populations who essentially are British first, but then they know, okay, I have my roots back home, whether it's Ghana, Nigeria, Jamaica, or wherever. And so at right now, I think we're kind of in the second and third generation of immigrants. There's a lot of, you know, reaching back out to your previous cultures happening, and a lot of people trying to really identify with their roots once more, with their blackness and their you know, their racial identities, but also their national identities back home based on their parents' nationalities as well. A lot of black immigrants and black British people are doing very well in our society, I would say, but that doesn't deter from the fact that, you know, there is, you know, some institutional racism that continues to happen. There is also a lot of continued whitewashing of cultures that also happens, whether it's in the workplace or so. And I think things are getting better post 2020. I think the Black Lives Matter movement definitely helped to advance the Black movement in the UK. We've also had, you know, a lot of Black youths that were killed on the streets of the UK, who we do try to, you know, whose messages we do still try to promote, and we want their voices to continue to be heard. And so right now, you even see our adverts are diversified. You see more Black faces here and there. And so generally, I think there is definitely 100% of cultural acceptance. And in London, where I live, I think I'm quite biased because, you know, there are Black people everywhere, I would say, and it's quite multicultural. But I know there are other parts of the UK where you don't see that much representation. And, you know, the extremist groups definitely exist that are anti-Black. And I know a lot of people who do face negative experiences in those parts. But overall, things are definitely progressing for Black people in the UK.
You know, what I found fascinating about what you shared was you mentioning that people there now currently would more say they're British first, then they would go back into their roots. Where I think here, the because of the interesting history of how blacks got to the US specifically, right? There's still that there's a dynamic where you had the involuntary immigrants, or what we would known as the slaves, who were brought here against their will, and they have their descendants who have created an identity that we know as a Black American, African American culture. And then we have the New Age immigrants who came in the 50s and 60s, who are voluntary immigrants for the most part. And then there's that there's a tension that exists, and because of the historical and misinformation to some degree, and the portrayal of the differences in blackness in media, and that kind of creates this it kind of pit both groups against each other. And because of that, though, that you have this resurgence in its own right of many people who are African first. So my parents are people who immigrated here, after the 1960s. They come and they still recognize the Africanness first, and then I'm Nigerian first, right? Before I even I'm not, and some people they don't, because they didn't necessarily go through that assimilation, that a cultural assimilation. There's still that resistance to acculturate. There are many people here that, and my mother is one, my mom's one for an example that I can say have been here all their lives, but they've created an enclave of other like-minded immigrants, and they create this enclave where they are able to sustain their identity. And so for them, they can, they still believe in their hearts of hearts that they are Nigerian, despite the fact that they've been in the US for 40 years, and they do everything almost American when they got to go to work and things like that. But in their minds, and when they tell their kids, and when they tell their kids' kids, "You're Nigerian. We eat eba and efo, like we eat jollof rice. We listen to, Fela. We listen to music. We do all this stuff. We're not American. We're not them, and especially we're not Black Americans, right?" So there's that dynamic that exists here. So it's just interesting to see how you describe it, and how the history, even though there are some similarities because of the reemergence of you know, of Black love and the idea of the Black Lives Matter and the impact it had worldwide, you can see the effects and how people desire now to embrace their Blackness. And so that's pretty cool to see as well. Yeah. That's awesome.
No, absolutely. And so, and just to say, I think even in myself moving to the UK, so I always, because a lot of my child rearing, I guess rearing years were in Ghana, I always knew I was Ghanaian. And so even when I moved to the UK when I was 12, I was always like, yeah, I'm Ghanaian. I'm from Ghana. And that's always kind of stuck strong with me. I'm like Ghanaian first. Whereas when I met, for example, other Black British students who maybe their parents had moved and they were born British, there was a bit of a disconnect initially in the early 2000s. But now I think there's a stronger connection to my nationality back home. So, oh yeah, I am Nigerian. We say these, I love Afrobeats, I eat a lot, you know, that stronger celebration of culture, which I absolutely love.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't cool to be African, Brianne. It wasn't cool.
It wasn't cool.
Let's just keep it real. Cool. It was not cool to be African during those times, during the 2000s. I'm going to assume we're about, you know, close to the same age. And it was back then growing up, it was not cool to be African. People would rather be Jamaican. I remember that vividly, right? Like, there was just this idea of it being, you know, something that you were, you mean the food, like even the food, right? Like, I just remember growing up and like having to try my very best to get the smell when I'm going to school. I didn't want to get, you know, like I'm trying to get the smell off my clothes. I don't want them to even know, right? And so, I mean, now to see this shift in how they perceive it. I wonder though, since we're still on the topic of food and we'll transition more into your business because I want people to know more about that. But in the spirit of talking about food, how do people still, like, because there's so many like Africans and Black immigrants who have a history or in being in like the UK, so many Nigerians, so many West Africans specifically, I know.
Yeah.
Like, how much access do people have to traditional food? Are there a lot of restaurants? Is African food viewed as like something that people are looking for now, or is it still like not a thing?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely growing. So, boy, one thing we do struggle with is in mainstream grocery stores, it's difficult to find our traditional ingredients like yam or okra. Still, really? It's only in certain locations where you find this. Otherwise, you have to sort of go to areas where Black African populations reside. So areas in South London, East London, Northwest, but not really in Central London. So you do have to kind of trek a bit, you know, well, depending on where you live, kind of venture out to find your local foods. But in terms of restaurants, one thing that's actually increasing is fine dining African foods, particularly fine dining Nigerian foods. In Mayfair, which is kind of like the bougiest area in London, the most expensive, you know, millionaires, billionaires live there. There are about 3 or 4 Nigerian fine dining restaurants.
Wow.
And, you know, they're well respected. They have, you know, customers from all over the world. And so there's definitely an increase. I think in general, African food is going through a movement and kind of going through a wave where it's... there's an increase in its awareness that's happening right now. And I think a lot of people outside of African cultures are willing and dying to try a lot of different African foods. So I hope that there'll be more accessible ingredients. There are a couple of, I know, startups by Black British Africans that are trying to, you know, get African foods into the e-commerce space by having, you know, those multicultural e-commerce grocery websites. So I think there's definitely an increase, and I see that improving over time.
Okay. Yeah, this kind of is very similar here too. We have some, but there are a lot more places now, I think, where you would have to access, you can have a little bit more access to it because, but it would be more, I think there are a lot more international grocery stores. So they're not necessarily, you know, owned by African immigrants. We have some that are, but they're all, you may have some people that are from, you know, from the Latin America, and other parts of the world where we share similar ingredients in how we make our foods. We have some commonalities in the ingredients we use, and so we're able to kind of access it through there. Otherwise, yeah. It sounds like it's very similar in how, except for the fine dining. I haven't seen a bougie, like the bougiest African restaurant here yet. Not to say it doesn't exist, but yeah. I haven't seen it yet. So I would love to, like, I need to see, somebody needs to make a TikTok video.
Absolutely.
About how that, yeah. about how that is. All right, so just quickly, like, about your business. And like I said, what I loved when I heard about this is just the idea of what you're doing in terms of promoting the that African food can be consumed and you can still lead a healthy life, right? So just kind of sharing a little bit about my like fitness and health journey. When I was going, I went through something similar where I was trying to find, like, you know, a way to be healthy and have a diet. But I love my African food. I'm big, love okra soup, love, like, you know, the starch, all that, right? Whatever starch it is, fufu, whatever, you name it, I got it, right? And so, but I felt like I had to sacrifice my African diets in order to be able to maintain what I considered healthy at the time. And I was younger, I was in like school, grad school, and I felt like I couldn't eat all this because it was too rich. And, you know, and I'm learning more about African food. It's too rich in sodium, right? All these soups, you're using too much Maggi cubes. And right. So I didn't feel, and because, right, we haven't even talked about like the calorie counting thing. Right. And so back then, right, it's not something where how do you count calories for, you know, for gari, or how you, and especially for people like me who like to soak and drink gari, you know about that, right? Like, so, like, yeah, all those things, right? So how do you, you know, track those things, right? And, you know, when my fitness pal is a thing, and even to now, I still use it. And so I was like, I was going through, you know, my own personal dilemma as to how do I go about maintaining this? And so to be able to see that there are people making efforts such as you, right? Because when I went to a conference in 2014 and I was doing a presentation about my work, and I ran into a nutritionist who's from Zimbabwe. And that was one of the things where we were talking about, how do we get these ingredients that we want to continue to use for our food? And how do we find a way to track it? How do we find a way to convert it into knowledge and information that health practitioners, that's doctors, right, and nurses can use, because our parents are getting older, right? And due to the transnational dynamic, right, like, for example, using my mom as an example, like, my mom, like I said, is still in her mind Nigerian. But when she goes to the doctor, what is she going to tell the doctor? And how is the doctor going to help give her the best advice and information about the food she's eating if they don't have any type of information that they can use to convert? Because for us here in the U.S., the idea is, because we all live in the same spaces, they feel like African and African Americans are the same. When, because we all look alike, so they all assume we're the same, and we all eat African American. We don't eat the mac and cheese. We don't eat the soul food all the time. So the challenge was, how can we start getting our cultural needs out there so that our health can be tailored, healthcare can be tailored in a way that is still culturally respective to our practices, right? And so seeing what you did just was like, I was like floored by it, because this has to be, this is the way it needs to go, because more people now are trying to catch up on practices, calorie counting, tracking, all these things that help, can help maintain accountability and health and wellness. So I want to know, like, your model. I want to know how is it received when you propose this? I'm curious to know just how this thing has been growing and going, so to speak.
Yeah. So, I mean, I totally relate to your story, because I also have used my fitness pal for over 10 years. And it's only now that I start to see, maybe, like, okay, gari is there, but is this really accurate?
Exactly.
Is this not? And I like the numbers. I think I like to keep myself accountable with numbers. And I've worked, when I was practicing as a nutrition coach, with people who also like numbers. And so that was sort of a need that was always expressed. Like, okay, this is healthy, but what is the calorie count in this? How much protein is in this? How many carbs? What is in this? So I sort of made it my personal mission to find all of this out. The truth is that the data exists. It 100% exists, and it didn't take me that long to find the data. A lot of food and drug boards by African governments and under, you know, food and drug authorities in different nations have that nutrition data. The Food and Agricultural Organization under the United Nations has that data. it's all about finding the right platforms to share that data that will be accessible to consumers and actual people who want to adopt that into a healthier lifestyle. So that's sort of what Best Body Africa is about, you know, creating that platform where we can share those nutritional benefits and nutrition stats of African food. That's definitely one side of it. On one hand, it's the missing link, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of people love it. I think even just in terms of, even I guess Africans and non-Africans alike, but Africans are sort of the aha moment, like, oh my goodness, I'm finally seeing that representation of my foods, seeing the nutritional composition. I never knew this.
Yeah.
I can't believe you share, you like, this food has this amount of calories. Oh my goodness, I've been eating way too much. You know, it's that realization that when you break it down and tie it to nutrition fundamentals, you are able to then adapt, you know, really have that realization of how much to eat of this food or how little to eat of this food along your journey. And also just realize that your foods aren't actually as bad as you think mm-hmm. when you actually share the nutritional properties. And on the other hand, a lot of non-Africans also turn to the platform because they are also seeing that, oh, wow, African foods are healthy. I didn't know this food had this much protein. I didn't know this food had this much vitamin C. Wow, let me try this food. So as a result, I think it's been well received. Largely, there are some people who don't think that, you know, why should you have nutrition stats of African foods? Are African foods are all about indulgence and culture and foods, calorie counting, and sharing these nutrition stats are highly westernized and centered around, you know, maybe the BMI, which of course is highly biased. It was created by physicians around a white man's body.
Exactly,
it's questionable.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I think what calorie counting has shown is that even though it's a rough estimate, it's not entirely accurate, there is some validity in the practice and in nutrition. And so if you believe, and if you have used calorie counting and, you know, sharing the nutrition stats as a useful tool, and many have, I have, I'm sure you have, a lot of my clients have in the past, then having that data available would be extremely useful. So I do try to create that platform where, you know, the consumer can have easy access to this data.
Yeah. So you have the B2B and then you have the B2C. And the B2B is more consulting, like with larger companies. And then the B2C is more of like the one-on-one coaching.
Yes.
Okay. So which one of those do you feel has been, which one of those do you want to be the primary or has been your main, like, go to in terms of the, you know, approach? Which one has worked more or best?
Yeah. So the B2B is actually more recent, and I think that happened when I moved to the UK, and that's actually one of the reasons why I moved back to the UK, because I recognized that it was great to promote the mission in Ghana, but I think there's a wider global mission in that the global health and wellness industry is highly westernized and there needs to be a seat at the table for African foods.
Yes.
And the UK is a huge market for health and wellness. And so I always saw that an opportunity there to insert that African food narrative into narratives around health and wellness. How can we do that? By working with organizations, companies that exist in the health and wellness space to introduce African foods to their markets. So I've worked, for example, with a couple of apps where they wanted to include African recipes into their offering, and I've been able to provide that. Also, same with our nutrition, with our general healthcare system over here, working with the NHS's diabetes program to include, you know, healthy African food options as well. So that's something that's slowly gaining, I guess, more traction, and I hope can also gain more traction, because it is important to have that African seat in the global health and wellness table and just making sure we have a firm seat there. But I do have to admit the B2C is one that gains a lot more traction and that I guess more people know about. I don't think a lot of people know that I do the B2B stuff.
Okay.
But I think companies see what I do on the B2C and that's how, you know, they approach me. But I think there's more value in when I hear how people have been personally affected by the information that I share. I get a lot of people messaging saying, oh, I saw this about your portion control and about this, and it's completely changed the way I view foods and changed my relationship with food. Sharing that knowledge with people on a one-to-one basis or one-to-many basis through the B2C approach has definitely been, I guess, more fulfilling and I guess more fun as well, because that's where I get to create content and interact with people one-on-one and actually interact with the consumer. Whereas with the B2B, I'm interacting mainly with the business. And at the end of the day, isn't it all about transforming an individual's health? It yeah. absolutely is. Yeah. So seeing that tangibly in the people I help in the B2C model is absolutely beneficial. I love it.
Yeah. And I think, just to add, I think that it also just, it creates a sense of satisfaction. And I say that personally because, you know, because food is so connected to culture. Right. When you lose your food, sometimes people feel like they've lost their culture. You lose your identity. I mean, that's like the last piece that's missing. If you take away that cultural food, then it's almost like, wow, some people are like, who am I? And so I will admit that, like, even seeing one of your videos and just, okay, how do you portion control gari or fufu, you know, using the fist size, and this might be the approximate of like 100 calories. I will tell you that changed a lot of how I do like my family dinners now, right? Because I'm very big on making sure that my children, my wife is an African, she's African American. So my kids, being able to find a way to expose them to, you know, the Western culture, because my mother is Nigerian and Ghanaian, but like, you know, that idea of the Western food and trying to find a way to expose them to that, right, in a healthy way, was a challenge. And so being able to see that, you know, that video and some of the things you've shared on your Instagram, like Friday nights, you know, I felt much more comfortable being able to say, okay, Friday nights we eat African food, and I can be able to do this in a way where my wife and I, we're still in our fitness and health journey, we're in our calorie deficit and we're working on that, but we also now can find a way to track our African foods when we eat it for dinner, and our kids can still get the exposure to it, right? And so being able to do that is joy, right? And I still feel like I haven't lost myself, I haven't lost my roots, I'm not losing it, right? As a as a 1.5 gen and my kids being second, right? And so that has been one of the things. And so that's just a comment I wanted to share with you, or a testimony. But I also have two questions. You know, one is, what's your team? Like, how large is your team and the people that help and support you and make this thing happen? And then the second question is, are you interested in expanding your services to the US?
Yeah, so the first question, so I do the majority of the work and I contract someone to help with the IT side of things. So if you see, I do a lot of the content creation, the recipe development, the creation of the meal plans, then once in a while I consult maybe a dietitian to help out with that, and then an IT person to help with the building of my website and digital platforms. But I am in the process of trying to expand, particularly to include people on one hand to help with the operations side, so the technology side, helping with the platform, helping with social media, and on the other hand, the practitioner side, so also having dietitians, African dietitians specifically on board, to also contribute their content, to, you know, review a lot of what I do on the nutrition side. So I do hope to grow and expand it, my team soon, mainly because I can't do everything and it's so overwhelming.
Yeah,
not that I don't enjoy it. I absolutely do enjoy it, but I think I'm trying to also learn how to delegate it. Mm-hmm. It's hard, but yeah, I definitely have to do that. And so what was the second question
again? Expanding your services to the United States.
Funny enough, the US is my biggest customer base.
Really?
Absolutely.
And okay.
I don't know how it happened. I think I started to get the hint in 2022 because I would notice that a lot of the people that would purchase ebooks on my website had US addresses. Yeah. And a lot of the clients I would coach were based in the UK, sorry, in the US. And I think I realized there's a longing in the US to kind of return to your roots. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, well, first of all, there's a huge diaspora population there, but also among African Americans who maybe their parents didn't immigrate voluntarily through, you know, economic migration, but, you know, came to the US through the slave trade, are also trying to get in touch with their roots. Mm-hmm. There's a huge movement going on in Africa with the African Americans going back to, for example, Ghana every year to try to reconnect. And I think what I'm doing is kind of moving along that wave and moving with that zeitgeist as well. And I think that's why a lot of my customer base is African American. So absolutely, I think I do want to do more for US based Black people, and Black Africans in general. And I definitely do think it's because there is a bigger population of Black people in the US. I mean, statistically speaking, I think it is kind of a no-brainer that there's a larger population. So maybe that's why there are more people in the US that, you know, follow what I do and are my customers. But yeah, long story short,
I had to ask that. I wasn't aware. So thank you for sharing that. But I think, you know, I have a couple of things we'll have to talk about offline. But in terms of the U.S. and the population that you addressed. And I also think it is interesting, right, what your contribution is, you know, to the transnational movement, which I've kind of been talking about for some time in terms of what Ghana has been doing, specifically Ghana, Senegal, and, you know, in terms of bringing people back home. Right. And that was one of the reasons I created this podcast, was the idea of trying to build a bridge. Right. And I think we as African immigrants, we have the bridge where we come from Ghana, we come from Nigeria, we come from Kenya, wherever, and we go to the U.S. Right. And we have the ability to go back and forth whenever we choose to go home for December, Detsy December, everybody doing that.
Yeah.
Right? But we don't share that necessarily with our African American brothers and sisters. Now we are. Right. I think Ghana has led the way doing that. Right. I think, you know, with what the president was doing back then, and since like 2015, he's been doing that. But even before now, I think people have been embracing that, going back, you know, and now you have Afrochella, all these things. And now people find it very appealing, especially Black Americans who go back and they want to reconcile. And there's the, you know, gateway of return and all these other things that people are doing to reconnect back with their roots. And I think the food part, right, is what is playing a role. And for me, right, I wanted to go beyond where, you know, especially with what I experienced with my immediate family, where my wife is African American and I'm African, and the bridging of the culture through food, right? When you're able to come home, reconcile, you and you have the food to kind of symbolize your connection with that with that land, but then you're also now able to incorporate what your ancestors had to develop by being forcefully migrated, you know, here. And, you know, African Americans developed soul food historically with just out of nothing. Like, you took this and you created something that you had to, you know, and it's become a theme that's been heavily embraced here in the Black community. And so finding ways to kind of connect those dots has been one of my goals, right? The whole idea of reconciliation, the whole idea of, you know, I feel like we're stronger together, but we become more of an institution ourselves when we're able to bring our brothers and sisters who choose to, not everybody has to be part of it, but if you choose to reconnect back with your country or whatever country is in Africa, I feel like we're stronger together when we are able to share that. We can leverage the best of both worlds. And I think it shouldn't be something that we as Africans just keep to ourselves. I think it's something that other Black people should be able to leverage and take advantage of as well. So you're doing good work. And so whatever I can do to support, I want to continue to do that. But I do have one more question just as we're getting ready to wrap up. So at the end of the day, with all the great things that you're doing, what do you want your legacy to be? How do you want this thing? Let's say you sit back 30 years from now in your mansion, you know, in that fancy area in London with the fancy with the fancy African restaurants. Like, what do you want to be able to sit down and say, you know what? I did it. Like, that's Body Africa. We did it. We made it. What would lead for you to feel that way?
I love that vision you have for my life, so thank you.
You're going to manifest it.
Spoken that into existence.
Yes, let's manifest it. Yes, yes.
I love it. Thank you. So I always say that I've been healthy food on Google in about 20, 30 years' time. I want to see African food being featured in the top 10 searches, minimum. Mm. I want African foods to appear at the top of our minds when we think of a healthy option. I want a firmer seat at the table for African foods. And so a lot of that will look tangibly like, okay, in the search engine, when you type in healthy foods, you see African meal plans, other African practitioners, whether it's dietitian, personal trainers, nutritionists, really you know, having services, you know, to cater to Africans, you know. And I also hope for myself that Best Body Africa, it's a movement, yes, on one hand, but I hope it would be kind of it would be like a large entity. I don't know whether it'll be a corporation, an organization, whatever it is, that will continue to help people in various ways through different means on the B2C front through providing those platforms. I don't want to give away too much of my ideas. But I have a lot of different things that I want to do to really get the African food message out there and create different platforms and means for it to have a more of a global reach. And I also do want to see a lot of, you know, those mainstream apps that are founded by non-Africans featuring African foods primarily, and a lot of their content, their ads, the messaging. I think that would be my goal, just that firm seat at the global health and wellness table for African foods.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I want that to happen too. Brianne Hackman, jumping on the show, thank you so much for your time, for your insight, and just for all the things that you're doing for us transnationals all across. And I can't wait to just see you know, what you're going to do with Best Body Africa and what it does for us. Like you said, having African food needs to have a seat at the table when we talk about healthy food, and when we consider nutrition and dietary agendas for global health. African foods needs to be considered as one of the top options. So I am with you 1,000,000% as far as making this thing come to fruition. And so again, thank you so much for your time, your insight, your wisdom. And how can people reach out to you if they want to follow you, or they want to learn more about you and connect with you, or however?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can follow me on LinkedIn, Brianne Hackman. You can check out bestbodyafrica.com as well. Follow my personal Instagram, which is Brianne.Hackman, Brianne.Hackman. I'm also on TikTok at Brianne Hackman. And also absolutely follow Best Body Africa. So add Best Body Africa on TikTok, Instagram, and also YouTube.
All right. Well, thank you so much again. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll have you on the show again in the near future.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been a pleasure. And I just want to say huge kudos to you on your mission over here. You're doing such incredible work. And I can't wait to see you as well grow and blossom. And I want this movement, Black transnational movement, to be bigger and for more people to care about and know about it. So I'm really excited for you as well. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yes, I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that's going to do it for this episode of My Black is Transnational. If you like what you heard, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and review the podcast. You can learn more about this podcast by visiting our website at blacktransnational.com. You can follow me, the host, at blacktransnational_ on Instagram, or you can follow the podcast at Black Transnational Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. So until next time, my name is Dr. Kalichi Bay Lamberts. My Black is Transnational, and I hope by the end of this, yours will be too. Peace. We'll be right back.